Welcome back to the show. I'm Travis Chappell, and I believe that if you can connect with the best, you can become the best. So after creating 800 podcast episodes about building your network, I've come to realize that networking is really just making friends, if you're doing it the right way anyway. Join me as I make friends with world-class athletes like Shaquille O'Neal, entertainers like Rob Dyrdek, authors like Dr. Nicole LaPera, former presidents like Vicente Fox, or even the occasional FBI hostage negotiator, billionaire real estate mogul, or polarizing political figure. So if you want to make more friends that help you become a better version of yourself, then subscribe to the show and keep on listening, because this is Travis Makes Friends.
I'm working hard so the podcast can look like it's just a bunch of friends hanging out. Mm. And then people are like, that's me and
that's
my friends.
Part of the vibe.
Me and my friends sound like that. Me and my friends do that. It's like, yeah, that's what we want. I think you're only a failure if you stop after you fail. Now I know that I suck at this. Let's try not to.
Yep.
It's simple. We're all going to die.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
My podcast doesn't matter. Nobody's going to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
A day, well, maybe probably a day, but a year after I die.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah. What, just go do something and try to be nice to people. It's fine.
Yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the show. Today, I'm making friends with Zach Justice. Now, I got to tell you, this is one that is a little bit different than the ones we typically do here on the show, just because Zach is a comedian, an actor, and a podcaster himself. So typically, you know, I'm looking more than the business world and things. And when I have conversations with people like Zach, I like to still have that part of the conversation. And so most, if you're familiar with Zach's stuff, he's very, I guess, witty, sarcastic, clever. He's kind of always in this this dry sarcasm bit. And so at the beginning of a conversation, we have some fun and he kind of stays in that character. And then towards, you know, the middle of the end, he really started sharing a lot of not only his background and his story. So if you're used to seeing Zach's stuff, this will probably be one of the most serious contexts that you've seen him in. But it was also a lot of really helpful and valuable information. Frankly, stuff that I was just curious about. I was asking a little bit about the movie business, because he recently wrote and sold a script and the movie's getting made, and it was fully funded for millions of dollars and all that kind of stuff. And so we talk about the courage it took for him to move from one side of the country all the way out to LA and live in a house with like 10 different people. And then eventually finally got his own spot with his co-host of his show and producer, Jared, who's also making it in the Hollywood world. And so, I was just very curious about the business of Hollywood. Like, how does that exactly work? What do you, like, when you write a script, who do you take it to? How do you get that funded? And so we talk a little bit about the business side of things. And turns out he was actually in business school before he decided to pursue comedy and podcasting and some of these different things. So if you have not heard of his show, it's called The Dropouts Podcast. I started following it probably 2 years ago, and they may have had maybe 100,000-150,000 followers or subs at that point. Now they're pushing 1 million. Zach's personal page on Instagram is pushing 1 million followers, if it's not already there. And when I first started following him, like I said, maybe 1.5 to 2 years ago, it was probably 100,000, if that. So it's been cool to watch somebody who has the chops, who clearly has got what it takes to make it work. It's cool to have started following him fairly early on, and then see him go to the point that he's at now and actually selling movies. And we talk about in this episode that he sold a movie and he sold a TV show for at least a full season to get fully produced from stuff that he was writing as well. So really just kind of jack of all trades. He's got the business smarts and the knowledge in that sense. But he also comes at it from the approach of being a writer, a producer, being the talent, the actor. A very interesting conversation to me. And if you're used to seeing Zach in a more just like funny, playful context, then this one might be a little bit more informational about him, his life, where he came from, where he's going, and what he's up to now. So I had a lot of fun with this one. I hope you guys enjoy it. Please enjoy this conversation with Zach Justice.
We're acquaintances at best right now.
Well, you know.
We'll see if we'll become
friends.
That's
why we're here. Why we're here.
Good.
Yeah, it's more of an application process for you to be my friend than it is the other way around. But,
okay.
You know.
But what if I don't want it? Is this like a forced situation?
Well, I mean, you showed up, so you clearly want something.
I want nothing from you. Okay. I might want to hook up with your producer. You never know. And he's not even listening. Look at him. He's knee deep in some chips right now. I'm trying to make a move on him. He's fine.
Is that usually when you make moves, when people are...
mouth
distracted.
Full. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so they can't say much.
They can't say no.
Yeah, well.
And that's a dark joke. So kids, that was satire. So essentially, I'm teaching you not what not to do.
Right. Correct.
So
I hope.
Well, me too.
We're not me that too. Close yet. So
no, you're right.
I'll figure
right.
it out. Well, listen, dude, thanks for taking the time to come on.
Yes, sir.
You're close to here in LA, but you're not from LA.
No.
I was doing a little bit of research. So, but you, before we just turn on the cameras, you said you grew up in Vegas, but you were in Georgia for some time as well?
Yeah. So my mother grew up with a single mom and we were in Vegas together experiencing life. And then one day, I'd say I was 9-10 years old. She was a pioneer of online love and she got on eHarmony. She met a man who lived in South Georgia. And I'd say they talked 3 months, maybe saw each other once, twice in total. And then after the 3 months, he flew out to Las Vegas. And my mother and I were frequenting a Margaritaville.
Okay.
And he decided to show up and then get down on one knee and propose inside a Margaritaville. And yes, that's a red flag that she should have seen. And I think even at, 9 or 10 years old, I was privy to the fact that this is not going to last. But either way, we uprooted our life and moved to South Georgia, town of 1,000. And when we got there, there was a KKK rally in the town. If you look up on YouTube.
This is legit.
Yeah, 100% legit. I was scared, even though I wasn't even the one being targeted. I just didn't know that. I didn't know that was still a thing. I thought it was just history books. But my mom's like, where are we?
So you, of course, joined.
No. I led it, brother.
Okay.
Okay. So,
brother,
what I was scared of was I had some black friends. I was hoping they were okay. But the good thing is the KKK people weren't from my town. They just came to the town to try to rally the folks. But my town was against it. They were like, get out of here.
Yeah. Publicly.
So, good job on my town.
Yeah. Well, publicly, they were against it.
Yeah. Oh, on Facebook, though. Yeah. They were in some pages that were blocked. So it is what it is.
So mom gets proposed to from random dude in Georgia. During happy hour at Margaritaville.
Yeah.
In Vegas.
Yeah.
How long are you there for?
In Georgia?
Yeah.
I was there until I was about 20, I think.
Oh, damn. Yeah. So basically that was essentially where you grew up.
Yeah, it is where I grew up. I went to college there. I just went for sports for a year. I say I went for sports. I was supposed to go to another college up north, but I stayed home for a woman in Georgia, and
also on eHarmony. Or
this was high school. This was sweet, sweet love. First girlfriend I ever had. Thought we'd be together forever, and it turns out that statistically doesn't happen. Yeah, and she is married now.
Well, I hate to break it to you.
And I wasn't invited to the wedding. So if you're watching this, I planned on giving a speech, and it's a little rude to bring because we were friends before that. Anyway, wish her nothing but the best. But
it happens.
Now I'm here. It's all culminated to the Travis Makes Friends podcast.
Well,
we're not even in Vegas. We're using this background.
Well, we're pretending like we're.
Do they know that you're lying? I didn't go out to Vegas. We're in California
now. We're going to cut all this. So.
Oh, okay. Okay, good.
I actually married my high school sweetheart. So sometimes it does happen. We were 16. I was 16. She was 17.
You guys.
I'm 31 now. So it's been 15 years.
Are you thinking about getting rid of her?
Well,
what's her worst quality if you had to say it? Straight to camera.
Oh, man. If there was something that I could just instantly improve.
Yeah. Instantly just.
Probably not going to say it.
I get you, brother. That's a good idea. That was a test. Your wife actually sent me here to say that question. And guess who's getting some whoopee tonight? Not you, because you're married for a long time.
Also,
but she'll think about it.
Also, I don't live here, and she's not here, so.
Oh, we'll get you active. We'll throw a wig on old producer over here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Throw him over a sink and just get going. If you don't mind. How are your fries? Okay, thank goodness. He didn't even offer one.
No.
This is fine.
He didn't at all. Wait, is that from Irv's? What's interesting is that Durango casino that's like right by my house now has an Irv's Burgers and it looks delicious. I didn't know it was here. Is it?
Okay. All right. Better than Shake Shack? Oh my gosh. Okay. Well. What? Oh, wow. That tells me everything I need to know.
Going across town in LA is no small task. So.
No. Yeah. No, not anymore. It feels like I'm begging for it. So.
In more than one way.
Yeah.
Okay, so you did you like growing up in Georgia?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. It was cool. Small town. Everything was very sports oriented because there's nothing else to do.
Yeah.
So
you played tennis.
I did play tennis. Basketball was and still is my favorite sport. But same. High school, I didn't grow in high school until probably my junior year or so. But in middle school, I was like 5'2". And I was like, I'm never going to be a taller human being. And then I eventually became 6'3", but I got into tennis already. So I'm like, let's just stick with this and see if it works. Oh, and what do you know? I don't play anymore. So
the height's an advantage in tennis though, too, no?
Yeah. And with women. So there's two good things.
That is a good
pickleball. Yes. Airplane seats. No. So there is a downfall.
That is also true. Yep. But you recently tore your ACL.
I tore my ACL, I think over a year ago.
Okay.
But I do repost the clips quite often because I think they're funny of me on anesthesia.
Yes. I've seen those. Yeah.
So, but yeah, played tennis just for a year and yeah, it is what it is. We're living. What about you? You play basketball?
I played basketball a lot growing up. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. I sometimes play now on the weekends. Nice.
Well, if you ever want to play, I play at Universal.
Do you?
Yeah.
You actually play
LA Fitness. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next time in town, I'll definitely, I'll take you up on that. I do enjoy playing. It's just one of those things now where it's like, man, it's so easy to get hurt.
But isn't it so fun to get hurt?
It's so much fun. Yeah.
To feel
every
something.
Time I do it, I have my left toenail is completely black currently.
Oh.
From basketball.
For supporting. Oh, from basketball.
Yes, from basketball.
Gotcha.
And yeah, every time I play, there's like some sort of an ailment that comes from it, you know, even if it's just like, whatever, just a giant scratch on my arm or whatever. And my wife's always like, why do you do this to yourself? I was like, I don't know. It's fun.
It's fun. It's
enjoyable.
Gets me away from you. It's usually what probably you're thinking, but can't say.
It's a couple of hours of
just
freedom.
Do you have children?
I have two children.
Yeah. You need that. You need those hours.
Oh,
get out
sure.
that aggression.
Yeah.
So you don't go home and take it out on them.
Take it out on them, you know.
Physically and emotionally.
Sure. Are you really a dad if there's not some
abuse?
Yeah.
Phew. I don't know. My mine wasn't around too much.
Yeah, that's so fair.
Yeah.
Didn't get the glimpse of that.
No. He was fighting in wars,
but saving our country. Had a stepdad.
For a little bit. Yeah.
So he didn't. They split up and you guys stayed in Georgia?
Yeah.
Loved the town.
Huh? Mother had a job. Zachary, which is me, had friends, so we stayed around.
Yeah. Finished up there, and then mom bounced back to Vegas.
She went back to Vegas. My grandfather lives there. He's this 2 days. He'll be 85.
Okay.
So I think she just wants to spend some time with him before he goes to God's meet and greet.
Yeah.
But knowing my grandpa, he'll be in hell, and that's okay. You know, some people got to do it, and he's one of them.
Yeah, they need attendees as well.
Yeah.
Down there.
Of course. Yeah. He'll be on the, you know, when you go to someone's house and they think they're fancy, so you have to like sign in.
Yeah.
You were here. Yeah, he's going to do that to hell. Anyway, what do you think you're getting into? You a heaven guy, hell guy?
You know, so I put in a lot of work early on to get into heaven. Lot of work.
You front loaded it.
Major. Yeah. So I feel pretty good about it. You know, like clocked in so many hours.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I think I got a pretty decent mansion up there.
Thank goodness.
Waiting for me. It just depends on like how long I live now and to what extent I negate those early years of the time that I put in.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It's kind of funny to think about Jeff Bezos gets to heaven somehow and his mansion is not as nice as the one on Earth.
On Earth. Yeah.
He's like,
because he was too busy making earthly deposits.
Yeah. He's like, I was killing it on Earth.
Yeah.
And now I'm just like, everybody's got a mansion.
He was solving for the wrong thing because heaven's eternity. You know what I mean?
I get it. He probably has God's email though. He'll figure it out.
Oh yeah. They're definitely in communication.
100%.
It's either God or the debt. Like he made a deal with one of them.
Yeah.
He made a deal with.
Yeah. I'm not CC'd in on those, but I can make my.
Yeah. You think you're headed one way or the other at this point?
Depends
on. Are you 20? You're 27, 28?
28.
28.
Yeah, so I've got like 2 years left, I think. Self-afflicted is probably how I'm going to go out. But I think there's a clause where if you do that, you go straight to hell. So I'm going to try to fake it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you think that the like admissions people in hell wouldn't know that you faked it?
They're busy. You know how many people die every day?
Slip through the cracks.
Yeah. I'd have someone really important die. Oh, like in the morning. if someone really important dies, like I'll see it on Twitter and then I'll do it that day. So like they're really focused on that.
Oh yeah, that's smart.
Yeah, yeah, a little like Kenny Chesney.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, he's going to heaven though.
True. That is a heaven guy. Kim Jong-un.
There you go. There you go. That's going to be a big... Oh. That's going to be a big day in hell.
That's going to be a big day. Welcome.
Just like a whole party. Like a bandwagon of...
Hellions.
Of world
Kim
leaders.
Jong-un and my grandfather.
All right. So when you're in high school, did you... What type of career were you expecting to get into?
Business.
Really?
Yeah.
That was like...
I would go home every day and read entrepreneur.com and just read a bunch of articles. And then I was supposed to go do the whole Wharton program at UPenn. And instead, again, I stayed home for a girl. So, you know, now I'm out in LA and I'm the product. I'm trying to sell myself. Not on the corner, like my mom. I'm kidding. She's an elementary school counselor and she would actually scoff at that joke. Not even a joke, really. But yeah.
So that's, you were wanting to be a business and
correct.
Then stayed home for a girl.
Yeah.
Didn't work out, obviously.
Yet.
Yeah. Crossing fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like she's getting married.
Well, she's already married. Yeah. Yeah. But besides that, we're doing well.
Other than the marriage.
Other than the marriage and us not talking for a long, long time.
Yeah,
I think we're doing well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, every relationship goes through its ups and downs. This is just one of the downs, you know.
Man, this valley is bleak though. There's no water.
It's a pretty long one.
Yeah. I love to peak, but I already did that in high school. So
good for you. So you decide to come out to LA because you want to get into entertainment at some point? Like was that a goal?
I was in Atlanta and a TV show was filming in the area. And I was like, oh, what would it? It was actually a TV show that the girl I'm talking about really liked. It's called The Vampire Diaries.
Okay.
And I thought it would be cute if her and I were extras in it, just something to do. And then she couldn't do it, so I just went by myself. And I was always, you know, the class clown or whatever it was in school. But I was like, oh, you can have a job in entertainment. This seems pretty cool. And obviously, I don't want to be the extra. So I dropped out of college and then I went to acting classes for a couple of years. Then I moved out.
In Georgia.
Yeah. And then I moved out to LA. That's where I didn't have any money. And I found that place on Facebook Marketplace. It was a 2-bedroom apartment, 900 square feet. It was 10 guys living in it that I didn't know.
Is that real?
Yeah.
10 guys.
Yeah.
In a 2-bedroom apartment.
Yeah. If you turn on the microwave or the air conditioner at the same time, all the power would go out. Then the guy I do the podcast with now, Jared, he moved in 3 months after I did. And the first night he was there, he was from Ohio. He'd never been to California. And there was this guy who was dating a woman or maybe just hooking up. And she seemed like she was strung out on the most potent heroin.
Yeah.
She was really struggling.
None of that weak shit.
No. She was getting in there. But so there's 6 of us in one room, 4 in the other. I was in the 6th room. And Jared comes in. He gets a top bunk. And the guy that's hooking up with the heroin shouty is below him. And he would put up bed sheets at night so he could participate in sex with this woman.
Yeah, sure. Have some privacy.
And Jared, so they're having sex and Jared's first night there and he's never been to California before. So he thought he was experiencing his first earthquake, which is pretty hilarious. And then the rhythm stopped. He's like, oh, wow, it's over. And I think they were just getting, they knew that maybe people could hear him and the guy above them could feel
could
it.
Potentially.
So they stopped. Yeah. And then 10 minutes later, they get hot and heavy again. And he was like, an aftershock.
Yeah.
So, that was where I lived for a while. Ate the dollar store food every day.
And this is legit. Like, I'm going to LA to become an actor. And I assume that whole house was full of people that were just like, I'm going to LA no matter what it takes. I'm going to live in this 2-bedroom apartment.
Type thing. We did eventually move out because there was a middle-aged man who became my bunkmate because it would overturn every month. There'd be people that left and came in. And this guy was drinking himself to death. And we thought he might prison shank us outside of a prison. So just murder. So we got scared.
Regular murder.
Yeah, we got scared as a collective. So 6 of us banded together and moved to a 3-bedroom apartment. And then Jared and I lived together in the master bedroom. I don't want to sound too rich
bougie.
Here.
Yeah.
But we were in there. And
Extreme privilege.
Yeah, we were privileged. Never had any woman even sniff coming over, but we were privileged. And then eventually, one after the other, some people would move back home, some people would move out, move in with a girlfriend. And Jared and I, he made a bet with me that I can get 100,000 followers on TikTok. This was similar to, I think it was like 2019.
Okay.
He said he'd get a tattoo of my name if I did it. And then I think we did it in like a month or two.
Oh, really?
So it's like, okay, now we have a little bit of a following.
Doing what?
Just comedy, little skit videos that if anyone ever laughed at it, I would think they're strange because it was very not funny and stupid. But, you know, that's part of the ignorance tax of doing comedy and content. And then we started the podcast right before the pandemic because we were going to do this show called Zach's Diner, where essentially between two friends style, but for a younger audience, make fun of them. Pandemic hit. We had all this equipment. So it was like, I always love podcasts. I was like, hey, let's start a podcast. And then June we'll be doing it for like 4 years.
Yeah.
So, nice. And now phenomenally rich, better than most people. I look down on the poor and I spit on them if I see them.
And you have two master bedrooms now, or
one master bedroom?
Split into bunk?
I'm in it.
Okay.
But he has two bedrooms. So there's a Jack and Jill in the house. So we moved to a house after the apartment. And so he took one room, Jack and Jill, and then he edits in the other studio space.
What did your mom think about all of this?
Well, growing up, she would take anything that I liked away, my phone, video games, TV, whatever it was, if I got a B on something.
Yeah.
So she was very educational driven. That's why I was going to go, like, I was supposed to, you know, the kid that goes to Ivy League and does well. And my brother went to Columbia. My brother played football at West Point. My other sister's a doctor. My other sister's in med school right now.
Damn.
So it's like education was.
So you're kind of a failure then.
Oh, 100%. Yep. Yeah. But boy, do I thrive in it. Yeah. Because like now if I stab someone, no one thinks too much about it. He's already
the
black sheep.
That's the beauty of low expectations.
Oh my gosh. I love low expectations, especially when women have them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, I'll open a door for you. I mean, I'm still going to, you know, not treat you well, but I'll open a door for you. Like, I'll emotionally hurt you for the, like, duration of our, but boy, will I be.
But then you open the door and they're like, oh my gosh, what a gentleman.
Only in public, of course. Because then when it obviously comes out, they're like, she's like, this guy did all this stuff to me. And then I can talk to the public and be like, did you guys see it? And the masses will be like, no, you were great.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah,
that's how you should treat women. Again, guys, satire. So just for our new listeners, some people don't get it these days. And they're like, that guy means it.
Yeah.
And we're like, no.
Yeah.
No.
Well, you get a lot of, I've seen a few clips of the show come out. And then when you go on other people's shows and you get this where people are like, you seem like the kind of guy who's like a misogynist raised by a misogynist type of a guy. So it's
hilarious.
That's what makes satire.
Yeah.
Is the fact that.
Yeah,
it's incorrect.
It is pretty funny when people don't understand that it's a joke and it's like, hey, this is how you shouldn't act.
Yeah.
And they're like, this guy probably, my gosh, he's leading the anti-feminism charge. And I'm like, no, sir. I just said a funny joke that came to my head.
Yeah, right.
Because it's wrong to say. So
how did you enjoy the podcast when you first started it? Did it feel like it was something that you really wanted to keep doing?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a nice pillar to bring people back to, you know, no matter what I do, TV, movie, you know, a video does well on TikTok, I can just funnel the audience back to listening to me for an hour, which is stupid on your guys' part. Whoever does, you idiots.
But top 25 better comedy pod, top 50 comedy podcasts or something on Spotify?
We were 19 today. Number not 19. That it matters, but we're better than everybody that's below us.
Yeah.
And not as good as the people above us. But they probably paid to get there. Anyway.
That's actually probably true.
Yeah, it was cool. Our podcast, we were always in the middle of the road, probably on the lower end of, you know, not a household name podcast. We did decent for ourselves, able to get by, pay rent. Like, that was really cool. And then in the last, you know, year to last even a few months, we've like 5x the views. Well, damn. I guess the people that watch it have done it, but we've been very appreciative. So, yeah, as much as I joke, we have no ego with it. We're just going to keep doing it just because we think it's fun and people enjoy it. So if the views drop again, then it's whatever.
You do more on YouTube or audio platforms?
YouTube.
On YouTube.
Yeah.
That it was funny, man, because like I probably first started seeing clips of the show come out, I don't know, year and a half, 2 years ago, maybe. And it was one of those times where I was like, I feel like these people, I feel like these guys should be more well known than they are, you know, because like,
boy, were you wrong. Yeah, no.
But it's nice to be validated now, though, when, because like, I feel like I've watched kind of the progression happen where it was like, this must be just like a relatively new show because it seems like they have good rapport. You can obviously tell when people like seem actually professional at what they're doing. They know how to communicate. They have spent some time together. And just good banter back and forth between you and the other hosts or whatever. And so when I first started seeing clips, I was like, man, it feels like there should be more like traction on this video because it's actually really good quality. And I started following you guys.
Maybe you have bad taste.
And then
you ever think about that?
It says more about me than it does about you. Yeah. But then eventually everybody catches up and start getting some more notoriety and things.
Yeah. I think right now we're in a bubble. It's going to definitely pop. And we're going to, you know, just really nosedive to the bottom relatively quickly, which I'm excited about, you know.
Well, how do you know it's the bottom if you've never been there? You know what I mean?
Oh boy, have I been there. When I lived with the people, I want to go back to that. Struggling. No, I mean, I'm excited about it. I think I find a lot of fun in building, you know, I wanted to do entrepreneurship and, you know, startups. And it's really fun to build a community and build a business around this and be able to employ, like I just brought on my friend. I get to employ him now. I feel really blessed that I can even, I used to beg my mom, not beg because she would do it, but for a bus ticket to go back to Vegas this year for Christmas. And you know, now I can, when we go out, I can pay for her dinner and that feels really nice. And that's all I really need is to be okay enough to take out family and be able to help friends. And I find a blessing in that. And the people, not everyone likes the podcast, and it's the same thing of a restaurant. Like there's hate that comes on it, but imagine not liking a certain type of food and then going to the same restaurant every day or week. It's like, who's the crazy one here?
Yeah, exactly.
But
you have the recurring haters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but the people that do enjoy it, like they get it. They get the satire. They have fun with it. And that's really cool to see. I have no ego with any of this. I mean, as much as I joke about it, I have fun with the people that enjoy it. We've been doing live shows recently and it was great. We did one in New York. We did like 300 people.
Nice.
One here for like 200 people, and that's a lot of people, you know, especially from where we started. But
well, it's also a lot of people in a single region, because it's, you know, it's not a radio show where you're like talking to people in the certain zip code and it's easy to gather people in that area. It's like if you have a podcast, you have people listening in LA, but you have people listening in fucking Vietnam and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So it's difficult to put together a live show where people actually come out in a like condensed geographic region, you know? So congrats on that. That's awesome.
No, it was a blessing. And then people stayed for over 2 hours afterwards just to get a picture and like chat a little bit. And, you know, that's an odd thing just because, you know, obviously we don't see ourselves as better than any other human beings. And that doesn't mean that we are. But just that someone is willing to wait to meet you is such an odd concept.
Sure.
Because it's like, dude, I'm just like you. I just happen to have a podcast.
It's funny because I was talking to, I sent a clip of one of your guys' stuff to somebody. I don't know. It was right when I was first starting to figure out who you guys were. And I was like, are they from something? They've been on other, like, is this like a Nickelodeon star or something that's like, is this like Victoria Justice's brother or something like that? Like, I was just like, is this,
it's funny. Every time I see her, I met her semi recently and I have the same name as her dad. Her dad's name is
Zach
Justice.
That's what I found out because I Googled it and I was like, Zach Justice, Victoria. Oh, that's her dad.
Yeah. So,
I don't know how old this guy is, but.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe one day she'll add a DY at the end of that and we can get together. She doesn't have to change her last name.
That's true. But makes it really simple.
No, she's a really sweet person. I think we're cousins.
Yeah, I was expecting something, but that's kind of my point, is that it's cool to go to the place where people are waiting in line to meet you when it was just a few years ago when you were just living in a house with 10 other people trying to figure stuff out, and you started a podcast in the pandemic because you had done a set and had the equipment, and why not? Let's just go ahead and do it. But then what's cool about that to me is like, you weren't creating for any algorithm or for any other reason other than the fact that you enjoyed doing the thing that you were doing. And then that became the thing that did really well for you.
Yeah.
And now you kind of get to ride that wave a little bit more.
Yeah.
Are you like future, you know, 2, 3, 5 years, are you still looking like, hey, I really want to get into acting and this is kind of like the open door for me? Or is it, I really want to just keep doing this thing?
Yeah, things are going well. I just got funding for a movie that I wrote and then got a good, great director attached. Sure. He's done like 5 or 6 movies that have grossed 100, 150, close to 200 million each.
Nice.
So he's a great director. And then I just also got funding on another TV series. We're gonna shoot like 8 episodes.
Okay.
So that's gonna be great. And then, but I've been writing and doing that the whole time.
Would you say that that's like your core skill set?
Yeah, I would say for whatever reason, my mind moves kind of quick and dialogue I'm decently good at when it comes to writing. But I've been, you know, just learning.
All comedy?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you know, there's certain things. I don't know. I just always had a little bit of a knack for it. And that doesn't mean I'm always funny, but to some people, like I'm good at that part.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as long as I used to work in construction. I used to work at Outback Steakhouse. So as long as I will go back there, but as long as I can do something not to go do that again, sure. That'd be great.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's awesome, man. To be able to, again, leverage something that you really enjoy into more things that you continue to enjoy.
It's fun.
I mean, that's pretty best case scenario.
Yeah. And I noticed when I first came to LA, so I would have friends that, you know, they were in LA for a while or their parents had a lot of money. They were on shows since a kid and they always had money. And anytime we'd go out to eat, I'd always pretend I ate before because even like a $10 appetizer would set me back. But the people that get chances in this town are usually ones that had some kind of networking in beforehand. So I was going to see, it's like, okay, maybe once I have that opportunity, the people that are super talented that might not know how to get that chance for themselves, it'd be cool to bring them in and help them out and hear some more voices. So I'm excited to see what we can do to help other people as well in this space.
How does that process work? Like for, you know, you get a script together and you go get funding for it. Are they banking institutions? Is it production companies? Like who are you actually pitching?
How mine worked out was wrote a script that.
And when you're saying you wrote a script, like you wrote an entire screenplay. Like,
yeah.
It's not just.
It's like 118 pages.
Okay.
Yeah. So, write that. Nobody cared about it until I got a little bit of traction on the internet.
Okay.
And then it's like, okay, now I have a manager who sees potential in me and he has relationships with this director agent who then the director agent sends it to the directors under him. Does anyone find it funny? You know, this one guy who's like, wait, this is, you know, one of the funnier things I've read as of recent. What are you looking to do with it? He's like, I know how to point a camera. You know what's funny now in other people in for young people. And he's like, let's take a chance on this. So I was really very grateful that, you know, someone seasoned like him would take that chance on me. And now it's okay. Now we have that director attached. We have someone with, you know, a semi social media following. Those are two things that are better and a decent script. Those are better than not having nothing. And it's like, how do we leverage that to, okay, let's go get coverage from a company, to tell us, you know, how much, if this is worth anything. And we got really good coverage. So it's like, okay, now we take that to a financier who says, oh, okay, we want to get into this space. Like, and it makes sense because this guy's made money and this guy knows young people. So it's just kind of playing the game the whole time until eventually you have a movie. It's kind of the Wild West. No one really knows how to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's
not like a playbook.
No.
It's more just like,
no.
This person kind of knows that person who knows that person and we can all kind of get together and maybe make something happen if we all agree on a mission or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. What are next steps for a project like that? Like if you get funding or financing or they're like, yeah, well, let's do it. Where do you go from there?
Yeah, I think it's, so right now, yeah, it's just the funding comes in, a company will option it. So they give us a set amount of money to say to show it around town for like 6 months. And then say you want to shoot it for $8 million. Then they would go to Netflix or any other streamer and try to sell the rights to it for, you know, like 10, 15 million. So that like there's your profit and then you just try to make it for the lower budget. And it's kind of like shorting stocks a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, TV show as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you wrote a script for a pilot or like.
So I wrote the pilot, kind of developed the world. And then, yeah, it's essentially we're going to shoot it for a super cheap budget. I think, I don't, hopefully going to shoot it. This is super cheap, like 1.2 million for 8 episodes.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And then, because, you know, most are done for $500,000 to $1 million. And then we shoot the episode, and then I think we put it on maybe a streaming service that, like a freebie or something, mm-hmm. where it's like, okay, we can employ our marketing skills on that, and now it has more value. And then maybe after the first season, if it's okay and decent on a bootstrap budget, maybe they'll give us a bigger budget.
Might get picked up by another streaming service.
Yeah, or they might move it to their, usually the streaming service is a smaller streaming service, like a Pluto or a Freevee mm-hmm. that's ran by ads. And it's like, okay, this is almost like, it's not really the minor leagues because there's some great stuff like Jury Duty was on there.
Sure.
But it's like, all right, let's see if we can maybe take this to our bigger audience.
Yeah, there was a show on Hulu called Letterkenny that started on something like Crave or something. And
then
got picked up by Hulu or whatever. But that was one of those shows that was like, this clearly started with just a few friends and a small budget, and then just
was
hilarious and got picked up.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of how it is for like Workaholics or It's Always Sunny and some shows like that, right? It's basically just like a few guys that got a small budget. They put together something and then it was hilarious. And then Comedy Central was like, yeah, let's go ahead and bring that
on. And comedy is like, you can't check boxes with comedy.
Yeah.
So it's either funny or it's not.
Right.
And I think if you get the right minds together, I mean, you could have no money and make something pretty funny.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, TikTok proves that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're just hoping, you know, I think people are scared to make comedies now. It's like, people are like, The Office could never be made today because it's so offensive. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's still like the most watched comedy.
Yeah, sure.
So people still like it. And I think people are smart enough to, again, know what satire is.
Right.
So,
right. As long as somebody's willing to make it.
Yeah.
Then people are going to watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. In terms of creative control and things, since it's your script and you're the one who brought it in.
Yeah.
But also you have a lot of other people who are helping with all the moving parts, and you have people putting money on the table. And obviously whenever money gets involved, people really want to know where that money's going. Yeah. And they like to take a more controlling seat, have some more controlling interest in that. What type of creative control do you have in terms of casting or creative direction? Or
so
anything?
That's, you know, that's all the ebb and flow of whoever you work with, because, you know, sometimes it's foreign sales. So it's like, hey, we want this. So there's a certain number of actors that will sell really well overseas, and then you can like pre-sell overseas to help you get a budget. So it's just kind of going back and forth. And a lot of time the financier will have a relationship with an actor they want in it, or a relationship with some type of person that in their eyes will bring that value to be a safer bet for their money. Mm-hmm. So it's then, you know, it's just collaborative effort of, I don't think you can just bulldoze your way exactly how you want it. You have to dance with somebody a little bit, but hopefully you dance with somebody that doesn't step on your feet too much. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of it's with anything. It's give and take and compromise.
Yeah. What do you feel like have been like the biggest lessons you've learned going through all of this?
With the TV film stuff, just patience. I mean, you can't rush this thing if you're not the one putting up all the money.
Yeah.
It's like, you gotta, and a lot of the whole thing is someone's trying to appease their boss.
Right.
You know, so it's presenting something that is an easy yes for someone else to look good for someone else. Mm. You know, I can say it's great and funny all day long, but it also, if you put up $8 million, you don't want to lose $8 million.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
When you bring these projects to people, is it kind of like with the understanding that like you will also be starring in it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So is that like a part, like are you just making that a part of the deal? Yeah. Like how does that work?
Yeah, that's just a part of the deal up front. Like here's our terms that are non-negotiable.
Yeah. I mean,
you say that in a prettier way, but it's like, hey, I'm going to star in this, but here's the leverage. It's not just like, I'm going to star in this because I wrote it. It's like, all right, I want to star in this, but I'm also, here's the leverage of what I can bring.
Sure.
I understand the marketing. I understand the, you know, creating value with short form clips and
interesting. In terms of communication style for you, because it's clear that you have a lot of like natural gifts in terms of communication, and it seems like I mean, like you were saying, a lot of your siblings are just crushing whatever they're doing, and you seem to have some sort of like genetic predisposition to, you know, communication, but also intelligence. And I think comedy and intelligence are often, though seemingly far apart, they're actually very close together. You know what I'm saying? Like it's hard to label someone as intelligent when they make stupid jokes all the time, but also it's like, the intelligence is kind of what allows you to be funny in that setting. But also sometimes that makes it difficult to try to communicate to other people when you have like something serious, like a bigger vision to sell to somebody. Have you found that there's been any sort of like, skills in the last like 3 to 5 years that maybe you weren't very good at that you had to work on in order to get to the place that you're at now?
I think it's value. If you want to do something, there's already someone else doing it. And the best way to speed up the process of you doing that thing is getting close to that person. Mm-hmm. And I think getting close to that person, you have to provide a tremendous amount of value where it'd be almost stupid if they didn't say, yeah, come help me out. Mm-hmm. Like maybe somebody wants to become an editor. Hey, Zach, I will do my best and I will edit 100 clips for you for free. And if you like them, at the end of it, maybe we could talk about me coming on. Yeah. But it's like, I'm going to bring you this much value that's going to be fantastic. You'd have to pay so much money for. Mm-hmm. But it's like, if you believe in yourself that much, you're going to be good at it. I mean, and that's it with anything in life. And then as far as what I try to do, I try not to measure my success based on numbers or analytical anything. I try to measure my success on my input. So it's like I show up today, say I have to write a joke or write several jokes, or I have to, you know, write this script, or I have to do something for the business. Am I checking off the effort being put in? Like, like no view, good views or bad views, that's always going to fluctuate. A lot of times you can't determine if that what's going to do well. I mean, you're going to every day you're going to try to make a video better, but it's like, did I clock in today?
Yeah.
That's what I can be proud of. Did I get 10 million views on this video? Yeah, that's sick, but it's because I clocked in.
Look at the leading indicator.
Yeah. It's like just all input. It's like, if I just focus on nothing but input, the output's going to happen.
Do you have like a set schedule you try to stick to?
Yes and no. I have things in the calendar that, you know, I have a default calendar where it's like, this is my perfect day. Mm-hmm. And say I have other things going on that gets in the way of that calendar, that's fine. But if I have nothing going on, I know this is what I should be working on.
Got
if
it.
That makes sense. And I think timers are a big, I think in anything in life, it comes down to reps. You want to have a better relationship, make the reps of knowing your partner better. If you want the better body, reps of working out. If you want to be a comedian, write every day. It's reps. If you want to be the best at anything or better, it's just reps. So I use timers where I'm focusing on this thing for 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And if you do that for long enough, something will come of it.
Yeah. And when you're doing that right now, what are the things that you're doing? Writing mainly or?
Yeah. I think it's writing. It's because I have a hard time because my mind does move fast where, all right, I have all these things that I have to do, but I'll be doing one thing and focused on another. And instead it's like, all right, for 25 minutes, I want to write jokes, but I also have to answer these emails for brands or whatever it is. And I'll like think about that for a second. And then maybe I'll go into the email and I just cut into that time. Or it's like, I have plenty of time for all of that. All right, here's an hour I'm sitting down and writing jokes. A thought comes in, I got a pen on the side, I write it down. That's for after the hour. Then I come back to this. I think it's so easy to be successful nowadays because of how many other people have a lack of focus.
It's easy to stand out just by doing what's
required. So much easier to stand out.
Yeah.
Because if you can just focus on something and do hard, deep work, no one else is really doing that. A lot of people are, and those are the people that you love to compete with.
Right.
But if you want to just start off with anything, you can easily outwork most people nowadays.
When you're sitting down and writing jokes, what are they for? Are they for a movie script? Are they for like stand-up comedy? Are they for your podcast?
It could be anything. So it's like, so I'll sit down, I'll be like, podcast this week, episode 190. Okay, here's some bits that we want to do. Here's some segments we want to do. Here's some topics we want to do. And then you just kind of fill in the gaps.
Yeah.
And it could be anything. Okay, now I want this format for this video did well. Let's do a similar format. Let's write the jokes for that format. If it's a script thing, okay, you know, I have these scenes I need to do. Here's an hour. Let's just dive in. Yeah. And I think it was Ed Sheeran that said a long time ago, when it comes to like writer's block, if you just sit down, think of it as a water pipe with a ton of mud in it. And you just keep working, keep working. You're essentially pushing pressure on the water that's eventually going to come out. And say I'm writing jokes, and initially it's just sludge of just unfunny things.
Yeah.
If you keep going, and you don't stop, no matter how much sludge, even if you think the sludge is going to be forever, it's not. Eventually clear water is going to come out. Mm. So I think a lot of people say, oh, I have writer's block. Sit down, set a timer for an hour, and don't let yourself not stop writing something. I don't care if it's, I don't know what to say. You're going to come up with one thing in there that you wouldn't have came up with if you didn't try at all. Mm. So, yeah.
And this is daily, weekly practice for you?
I would love for it to be daily. I think a lot of times so we're trying to do some hires right now where I can focus a lot more on just being the creative. Cause now it's like, I have the business side of, okay, we got to make sure these brand deals are here. Do we want to get this office? Do we want to go do this thing? Do we want to do that thing? So I want to bring it on a producer where I can essentially plug and play, where I can really focus on the creative and the comedy. I think that just brings the best value from me.
Sure. So. Yeah. You got to figure out the unique ability that you bring to the table that nobody else does.
Exactly. And then go all in on that. Yeah. It's someone else can set this thing up for me.
Right.
My time's probably not the best at that.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's where it starts getting fun, man. When you start getting to choose the 80% of your time that you get to spend in your unique ability, the intersection of what fires you up and things that you're actually good at.
Yeah.
That's when things really start to pick up for everybody, because it helps everybody else in the equation. I noticed Jared, did he come out here for music?
He came out here for TV film originally to work on the back end side. So he was a PA for a while, just doing the grunt work, the things that suck. He does love music. So he still works on music and things like that. But he didn't like the TV film side as much. It was just grueling hours.
Okay.
And stuff. So, but I think
that was basically just how he was paying the bills when he came.
Yeah. And we thought he was so rich. He was making $500 a week or every 2 weeks. And it was funny because we were all living in the house with the 10 guys. We were making fun of him of how, dude, you don't know how well you have it.
He was the wealthy one.
He was far and beyond the wealthy one. Yeah.
It's like you can buy a burger and fries.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. One day,
you can get a combo meal.
I did something for him and he bought me a $6 pizza once, and that was the biggest deal because I hadn't eaten well in a while. Yeah. And it was a medium. It was from Domino's, $5.99, pepperoni. Oh man, that was a good day. But yeah,
what's he wanting to do now?
I think he's still music. His thing, I'm hoping I can help him guide a little bit. He gets a little nervous when it comes to the networking, which music is all networking.
Yeah,
that's all it is. So he's dabbling in that a little bit. And then, he likes the podcast. We had an opportunity for someone else to start editing, and he's just like, this is kind of our identity and our thumbprint if I edit it. So he's continuing edit this and we'll expand, and he's very handy. So, I think we're gonna get some office space, and he loves putting things together and whatever it is. So
yeah. So that's the next evolution for you guys then?
Yeah. We just found an office the other day. I think it'd just be fun to, I don't know. I just see the Barstools of the world and know we'd be a different cadence. Just their office videos, I think, are really funny. And it just opens up another world of, and I also feel like when you're in an office, because we're in our house right now, it puts you in a little bit of a different mode of this is the zone that we do stuff. So
yeah, it's when we walk in here, we're working. And when we leave, we can not have to think about
decompress.
That
anymore. Yeah.
With that particular business, if you had a kind of a perfect world, you could wave a magic wand. Is that something that you're trying to grow outside of even your own show, develop in network content?
Yeah. So, essentially even now we're launching other podcasts, helping friends. We set them up with almost a turnkey situation.
Sure.
And then also want to incubate some comedic talent.
Yeah.
Some writers and some people on camera talent, and then also have an arm that does the traditional TV film side. And I think just let that be a turning wheel that keeps helping itself.
So you're trying to build a production company
with
multiple arms that where it's we have podcast network, we have television, we have film, we have script writing, and doing all of these at once.
Exactly.
Nice, man. That's awesome. Do you have any idea on what that looks like over the next 1 year to 5 years?
Yeah, I think that is expanding our network of podcasts. I also want to do at some point a convention of like a podcast con.
Okay.
Bring a, you know, even start off with 10 podcasts all come to the same place, similar to how these other conventions do it. But
yeah,
it's the only convention where you could go to it and you're seeing the product that you're used to seeing. You know, it's like when you go to VidCon or when you go to anywhere else, a lot of the times it's, oh, you go see someone do a panel, but that's not the content they do online. They might be a dancer or whatever it is.
Oh, gotcha.
No, it's like, okay, I'll say, oh, Bill Burr is going to be in this room with Theo Von for 20 minutes. You can go watch that segment and then you can switch and like, you're watching the exact thing that you see online, which like, is people talking and doing a podcast, which is cool. And also it gives great content. A lot of people go there and sometimes they don't get great content out of it. But now these people, these podcasters come in, oh, sweet, I have a podcast this week too with all these people as well. Just like a little hub would be pretty cool.
Yeah, nice. That's actually something that we were talking about doing with. So we're building this, I don't want to say give too much of it away, but we're essentially building this kind of live event, podcast, co-working space. Vegas will be the first one. And then we kind of want to expand that. But that was kind of my thing is I was like, yeah, it's cool. Like, some people are doing live podcasts, but they don't feel like podcasts. It's like a live show by podcasters, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not really like the, it's like you said, it's not the same format. It's just like they're there, but it's not, they're not doing the thing that they typically do. Sometimes I just kind of want to be the fly on the wall, but I want a Q&A after they're done recording the show or something like that.
Especially. Yeah. I mean, it's the exact thing that you're watching is on stage. And then you get to also be participatory in a sense of, hey, I have a question about this. And
Well, cool, man. I mean, I always love talking with people who have like this online personality and then like getting to know some of the behind the scenes and stuff because
it's pretty wild.
When stuff works, there's always more to it, you know, because people online they jump to these conclusions about like, oh, well, these people just got lucky and, you know, everybody's searching for the excuses of why they're not successful and other people are. And when you're looking for it from that lens, you'll always find something, you know, so people look at it and just come up with whatever they can to justify why you're successful and your show is doing well and their stuff isn't doing well or whatever the case is.
Yeah. I mean, and it's also
always more to the story.
It's also curated effortlessness, you know, like
curated effortlessness.
Like that's like you're working. I'm working hard. So the podcast can look like it's just a bunch of friends hanging out. And then people are like, me and my friends sound like that. Me and my friends do that. It's like, that's what we want. What the things that I read and love every day, you know, I do intellectualize a lot. Like even speaking here, like this is more like the cadence I'm usually in. But I'm also that guy. And that guy on the podcast is also super fun to me.
Yeah.
Like I get to go play and have fun and people enjoy the playing and having fun. And so it's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's almost like a character extension.
Yeah. 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 It's a hyperbole of when I'm in my goofy mood.
Sure. Yeah. But like saturated into 1 hour rather than sprinkled across 24 hours or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you find the live shows are a little bit more difficult in that sense to like maintain that?
No, because we also do, like a ton of fun segments with it. And, you know, we bring people on stage. We do like a Family Feud segment. We bring people up. We just segment it out almost like it's a For You page of, okay, let's move on. People get bored pretty fast. And then we do a little podcast and the Q&A was people's favorite part for whatever reason. I mean, I get it too. I'd love to hear people I watch talk about whatever.
With a lot of the improv kind of off the top stuff that you guys do, I guess it's kind of a weird question. How much of it is not scripted, but at least purposeful? Does that make sense? Like,
most of it is me just letting my brain flow. Yeah.
Do you edit down episodes?
Yeah.
Ever?
Yeah. Every time. We probably usually record for an hour 10 and end up being like 50.
Oh, okay. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. So fair, pretty much.
Yeah. It's more Jared. He doesn't like any pauses.
Oh, really?
So he's like, I'm getting rid of all these pauses. Yeah, I'm like, do whatever you want.
The Oz.
Yeah.
Condensing the timeline a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was reading On Writing by Stephen King, which is like the memoir of the craft of writing. And he said typically when he writes his first version, his second version of that same writing is first version minus 10%.
Yeah.
So it sounds like that's right about where you guys are. It's like 60 minutes, you cut 6 to 10 minutes, and then you have like the final product.
Yeah.
Where's the planning come from for each episode? How intentional is it in terms of how many views go on a video? Like, are you searching trending topics? Are you looking for things to like hack the algorithm or whatever? Are you just what would be fun?
Yeah, it's more just now it's podcasting is so personality based. It's again, it's like The Office. I could watch my favorite characters do anything. Hmm. So it's finding people that you gel well with, put them in the room, and then you can, you throw segments or topics at them. And that's what kind of creates the content.
Most of your shows are not guest based, correct? Like, you're not bringing in guests.
No. They were for a little bit. But now that Tara's come on and she's been fantastic, just someone great to feed off of.
Yeah.
Especially when you have the female perspective and she's not scared to say like jokes that me and, my guy friends would say that people shy away from. She's just like in the middle of it. She'll one up us. It's great to have.
Yeah. Good dynamic.
Yeah.
Where did you realize, like, was there a point along that where you started seeing more significant growth for the podcast in terms of the type of content that you were putting out? Like, we brought this guest on, that episode did really well.
Yeah. I mean, obviously whoever's has great engagement elsewhere is going to have great engagement on the show. And sometimes we'll have people in that I'll know won't have the best numbers, but sometimes it's like for me, it's kind of cool to have them in. But yeah, you can kind of understand the engagement, how it's going to do every time.
Those are some of my favorite guests though, are the ones that are like too super low key. Nobody really knows who they are, but they're just a blast to have on, or they're doing something super interesting or super unique,
Like, we had Ray Romano on, and like some of his movies are my favorite.
Yeah.
But of course, the younger audience, they didn't watch Everybody Loves Raymond.
Sure.
But
you
guys just
probably
cool,
got more traction on Matt Rife than you did on Ray Romano. Yeah.
Yeah,
we just had this guy literally right before you who's the CEO of a sex toy company that does like $300 million a year. Nobody knows who the fuck he is, but like him personally, obviously his company's fairly well known, but those are the kind of conversations where it's like, that's wild, dude. Or we had this guy in last week who is at the Institute of Human Anatomy. So they have like 7 million subscribers on their YouTube channel now. Wow. But all they do is like dissect cadavers on YouTube and like show you your, like what your abdominal muscles look like and shit like that. It's like, is
there's enough people where, it used to be like, I'm in this niche and it wasn't that many people. Now there's, everyone's on the internet. You could carve out, you could be interested in anything and make a business out of it.
Oh, dude. So I have a friend who started a podcast on vertical farming.
Yeah.
Which was something that I didn't even have any idea existed. Just this microcosm of people who give a shit about how to farm vertically.
Yeah. And I'm sure it crushes.
Oh, dude. I mean, like, in terms of total audience, it's not a lot. But what happens is like some of these, micro niches, the companies that are in them still have ad budgets and they don't know where to allocate their ad budget because the audiences are far too broad on Google or Facebook or Meta or any of the other platforms. So it's like when you have a dedicated audience of listeners who give a shit about vertical farming, they're spending his second season. And again, I want to say it was like less than 1,000 downloads an episode, like 500 downloads an episode. His second season of like 10, 12 episodes, he got over $70,000 in sponsorships for.
Because it's so, like, that's the exact audience that buys from it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're willing to spend real money.
Yeah.
And I had another friend who started one called the Beginner Audiophile. It was just about like audio gear and equipment. But the people who geek out on that, they drop tens of thousands of dollars on a speaker or whatever. Yeah. So like those companies have, again, large ad budgets, and it's difficult for them to allocate those ad budgets across any other platforms profitably. But like, they're buying that attention because it's super underpriced for them.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, wild.
Same thing with like certain TV shows that are allocated for certain, like, I'm not speaking to any of the outrage that came from it on Roseanne. I didn't watch it either, but I mean, that was the number one show on because that part of the country didn't feel like they had a voice in entertainment for whatever reason.
Yeah, the Tim Allen show that was removed from Fox recently, Last Man Standing, I felt like was that way as well. It ended up getting pulled off, even though it was the top rated show that was out there, just because, there was just a group that wanted to see more of their shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's always that's the cool thing about the world that we live in now, you know, is like that you don't have, like, you didn't have to move to LA and then just like pray that a gatekeeper finally lets you in the gate.
Yeah.
You know, like, you got to come out here and forge your own path, build a name and reputation for yourself without getting permission from anybody.
The dam will break as far as you'll be able to find your lane and something will work out, but your time horizon just really needs to be extended.
Yeah.
You know, it could be 10 years.
Totally.
But trust me, if you put in the effort, you just can't be stopped.
There's a great quote that I really love. That's most people overestimate what they can do in 1 year and underestimate what they can do in 10 years.
I mean, exactly. But
it's just difficult to think about things in 10 years. But if you can nail that piece down, it's like, no matter what you pursue, you're going to find something, like you said, it may not even be the initial picture that you had in mind because you're like moving toward that direction. And then this one stops, but it pushes you in this other direction. And then, you know what I'm saying? Something's going to work.
Yeah.
It's just like, you got to stay in the game.
Yeah. And then it's not listening to the outside voices of family and friends. And I mean, I had plenty of that when I quit school, but it's like, it's going to suck for a while. And then when you're living in, you know, the not great living conditions, like I was, and people see, it's like, okay, you were meant for something. You were decently good at school. You were probably meant for something big. And now you're, can't even afford food. Like, why is
doing these stupid, what are you talking about?
Yeah. And it's like, okay, now you're at a point where you're making more money than you ever would being a doctor.
Exactly.
You know?
Well, actually Tom Segura said something one time that I really liked. He said, I'm convinced that you will find more fulfillment and happiness in the pursuit of what you want than you will in the achievement of what you don't want.
Oh, easy.
Something like that, where it's 100%. Like, even though you were living in a like less than ideal living situation at that time as like a young 20 something, like, it's just not, you just don't care. Like, if you get to wake up every day and do the thing that you really want to do, regardless of what all the other situation is, regardless of what culture tells you you should be doing, or regardless of what your family thinks you should, like, if you get to do that, like, that's a win.
Yeah.
That's just a win. You know what I mean?
The fun part is, maybe you have some central North Star, but having no sense of direction is also super fun. It's like, okay, we're going to try. I mean, now it's trying to build that light bulb. I mean, I think you're only a failure if you stop after you fail.
Yeah.
So you just got to, it's fun. Oh, I suck at this. Hey, now I know. Now I know that I suck at this. Let's try not to.
Yep.
It's simple. Eventually something's going to happen.
The only people that fail are the people who quit, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't, there's no version of failure. It's just like every fail. That's the thing is about failure is like, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. It's the price of admission. The question is just how many times is it going to happen before you like really hit something.
Yeah.
And it's usually not going to be like this crazy linear path either, where it's like utter complete failure, utter complete failure, utter complete failure, booming success.
Yeah.
Never have to worry about it again. It's usually like failure. And then like, oh, this one failed, but I made it a little bit further along the path this time, or this one failed, but this time I actually made some decent money doing that. Oh, this one failed technically, but like, it was kind of a W for me because I learned all this other stuff and I got to meet these people and they introduced me to that person. And then it opened the doors to this other opportunity that I would have never imagined.
Yeah.
So like, technically, yeah, that pursuit itself was kind of a failure, but like, I would have never been in this other position if I didn't like, you know what I mean? It's like that Steve Jobs commencement speech. You can't join the dots until you look backwards. So you just kind of, you got to have faith while you're in it that someday you're going to be able to look back and connect all the dots, because it's impossible to do it if you try to do it right now.
It's just like, and it's like, live within your means, take a chance on yourself, and you know, say whatever reason it doesn't work out, you don't have to live with, you know, what would have happened the other way. You would have been not happy at a job you didn't like.
Yep.
Instead of pursuing something that could possibly work out, and that's much better. Like, we're all going to die.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
My podcast doesn't matter. Nobody's going to listen to it a day. Well, maybe probably a day, but a year after I die.
Yeah.
So it's like, just go do something and try to be nice to people. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, listen, dude, I appreciate you coming on the show. I got to ask one more question for you. This is like episode, I don't know, 915 or something of the show. And I've asked this question to probably 500 plus people at this point. So, it's one of the ones I like to throw in at the end if we have time. Who you know or what you know, which of those two is more important in life and why?
And is you have to definitive one way or the other, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Who you know or what you know?
It's the thing is, it's an obvious combination of both of them.
Yeah.
But which one would you lean in?
I would say who you know, because those are the people that are going to impact what you know. And then also those are the ones that can help you give you those opportunities. I mean, if I'd rather be the dumbest person in a room, and still know I have a good skill set, because that's how I know I got some killers around me.
Yeah.
So I would go with who I know, not for a trying to use them perspective, but trying to learn from them perspective.
Love it, dude. Zach, where can people find more from you? What you're working on?
Follow me on Instagram at Shaquille O'Neal. And that's it.
It's actually at Shaq.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
At Shaq. But yeah, thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, dude.
Appreciate
it. Thanks for doing this. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. That's it for today's episode. Thanks for spending some time with me and my friends. If you want to be better friends with me, then head over to travischappell.com/team to subscribe to my free newsletter, Your Friend Travis, where I share what's on my mind about life, building a business, raising kids, being married, and anything else I would normally share with my close circle of friends. That's travischappell.com/team. And my biggest ask of you, since I'm sharing my friends with you, is to share this episode with a friend of yours that hasn't listened to the show yet. Then leave us a quick 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts and in Spotify. It would mean the world to us as it helps us make sure that this show continues to be more valuable to you. Thanks in advance, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.